Mr. Heron, Reel 5. We were talking about your time aboard HMS Keith, based at Dover.
Yeah.
And the relationship between the various levels of the crew. What about your relationship with people like the Jaunties, the petty officers, the leading seamen?
Well, again, you see, first of all, there was the business of the 4 hours on, 4 hours off watch keeping, which really didn't leave much time for any social activity between the various parts of the ship. You tended to stick more or less to the people that you were working with.
No, but I mean, the people who are in charge of you, how did they treat
you?
Well,
again, they treated, there wasn't, again, the same thing applied. There wasn't much time for high-powered discipline as there was on the big ships. I mean, this is why most people, including myself, preferred to be on the smaller ships. We didn't like the bullshit that went on in the large ships. So the small ships, that's the destroyers, and even the cruisers had more flannel on board, as we called it, than the small ships.
So you wouldn't see much of the leading seamen,
not really. I mean, we were all a very tight ship meant that you all had your jobs to do, and it took all your time to do your job, do the needs of the rest of the your mess, keeping it clean, doing the cooking, doing all the other activities one had to do. It didn't leave much time for the parade ground type discipline. I mean, that just didn't happen. Now, what did happen was that there were always a certain number of the crew that were a bit riotous when they went ashore, or they had punch-ups on board. All the usual problems that can arrive when you've got 120, or in the case of the Keith, 180 bods all cheek to jowl. So that was where the problems arose, there and in the pubs, and after the pubs they'd be, and perhaps the police had picked them up. But the Jaunty was there to sort that out and put the guys on a whizzer when it was required.
Now, how did you get on with the officers? I mean, what contact did you have with them?
Again, very little. The only guy we had much contact with was the signals officer. There was always somebody appointed as signals officer who in those days knew nothing about what we were doing anyway. Although the officially trained signals officers had followed later in the war, They did know their job and were trained to do their job. But on the whole, it was our responsibility. Because I became a leading telegraphist sometime in that, I can't remember when.
Was it on the Keith?
No, I think it was after I left the Keith. I think when I went up to Iceland, I think.
So what about the signal officer? What do you remember of him? And what did he have to do with you, if you see what I mean?
Well, so little. I can't remember who the hell he was. And what, I mean, literally, we seemed to go between a few hours snatch sleep, back in the wireless office, something to eat, knocking it together, the whole of that period.
So you just didn't see him?
Hardly at all. I mean, he was only designated. I don't think he really knew much about equipment or anything. In those days, I mean, it varied a lot when you went further into the war. I mean, when people became more specialised and the equipment increased in quantity and quality, then there had to be somebody in overall charge. But in the most cases, and in the latter part of the war when I became a chief and so on, then, of course, we carried a lot of the responsibility for communications.
I'll obviously come on to that. Now, what about the role of the captain, and was it a happy ship? You know, the crew morale generally. The role of the captain in that?
That was a very important factor. The captain and the commander, of course, who was responsible for the running of the crew. The discipline and administration for the crew. And was very important, and of course the attitudes of the chiefs on board to the various divisions was often dictated by the officers who were in charge. And
what were they like on the
They were good. I do remember that distinctly, that we had there was a good relationship in the ship generally, and that's a happy ship, which is a good sign.
And what did you put that down? You put that down to the officer, the captain of the command.
Captain, well, the buck ends there with a captain. I mean, there's nobody else dictates other than where he's going to fight and what he's going to do as a ship. But internally, everything comes down from him. He dictates to his commander, who does the regulations and looks after the ship generally. As to how he wants his ship run, and the commander in turn passes that information down to the lieutenants and the junior officers.
Now, anything happened before the phony war ends and the German offensive begins in May 1940? Any other instance you want to...
No. It was a very short period. I mean, it was longer than the one with the Blanche, but it was a very short period, really. And first of all, there was a period of sort of settling down period when we were getting thoroughly acquainted with our equipment and all that sort of thing. Well, there was a whole few weeks which were very busy when we first went on the Keith to get shakedown crews and all that sort of thing.
Was it a new ship?
No, it was an old ship, but the crew where I would... There was a modicum of crew already aboard who'd been with the Keith. But they increased the complement considerably during the period when I was going on board. So there were quite a lot of new bods on the ship at that time. But it's still a sort of shakedown period when everybody was getting clued up with their job, both in the department and generally in the ship.
And then, so I was asking whether anything happened before.
No, nothing of any import. I can't remember anything that was startling. I think apart from that thing I said happened on the other ship, a shipboard life can be pretty mundane when you're at sea and nothing's happening. So there's nothing really outstanding, and I can't remember any particular high friction within the crew.
Well, let's move on to when you were... The Keith was basically on... seems to be on helping with the evacuation of the BEF.
Well, not only the BEF. We started with the evacuation of the royal family from... I think it was the Hook.
Which royal family?
The Dutch royal family. The Dutch royal family and the bullion ships, which were being brought back to the UK with the bullion, of course. And it was from the Hook of Holland, and we lay in the Hook for about 12 hours while the Germans were actually advancing into Holland. That was in right at the beginning, so that should that would be about the 8th or the 10th of May, somewhere around about that period we were in the Hook.
And what actually happened? Can you describe what was happening?
Yeah, we were lying. It was. We laid overnight in the harbour. I don't know why we were in the harbour, because obviously probably waiting.
Which harbour? Rotterdam?
No. We were in the Hook. Sorry, the Hook of Holland. I made a mistake there. We were in the Hook of Holland, and we were lying in there, probably waiting. Although I didn't really know what was happening to that extent, but the royal family, I know, were on board ship and were being moved back to London or back to England, and the bullion ship with it. Whether it was one and the same, we didn't know. I mean, all I know was that I was on the upper deck and the Germans were flying over top their bombers were coming over, bombing all sorts of things, and I don't think they saw us because they were mining the river with parachute mines. And as they came over, you could see them drop these parachute mines, which were floating over the ship, back on the river, back over the ship, and we sort of watched it coming down, hoping to God it dropped in the river, which it did do. I think only about two or three, they dropped two or three mines that I actually saw when I was lying alongside. But that wasn't particularly, except that we knew the Germans were advancing very rapidly there.
What happened to the Dutch royal family and these bullion ships? What was happening to them?
Well, nothing, apparently. They got back quite safely to England.
So you were just an escort? Nothing was carried aboard you?
Well, all that happened was we stayed overnight, presumably while the royal family were getting aboard, and then we came back with them to the UK.
Getting on board what?
Well, on board what, the bullion ship or two ships. I don't know what it consisted of.
So what was the next thing?
Well, the next was, we having got to sea, we went back to Wijmuiden, which is spelt with a Y. Well, I think it's Y-U-I-M, something like that. Wijmuiden, I can't remember exactly. But in Wijmuiden, and it had a very... the idea was that we would torpedo the jetty, which was enclosed the whole of the harbour, so as we'd silt the harbour up, and I think it was a bit of a crazy idea at the time, but anyway, that's what I thought, because obviously to make an impression on a mole, it was a mole that went out.
It was a mole, not a jetty then?
Yeah, it was a mole.
Solid built.
The solid built mole that came, well, how solid, I can't say, but I don't think we actually succeeded, I'm not sure. Because all I know, we were running in at high speed, and then, as was the, you know, you get the torpedo tubes facing abaft, and then you swing round at high speed and release the torpedoes into the jetty, getting as close as we could. There wasn't any particular anti-aircraft fire. Any fire against us. I don't think the Germans had time because they'd only just got into Holland there by then. So that was it. They'd settled down. And anyway, we came out of that without knowing one thing or the other, what was the success of it or otherwise.
And then the next thing?
The next thing was down to Boulogne. Now, that was a far more exciting situation. Well, if you like to call it exciting. We got down to Boulogne and we went alongside. There were three of us, I think. Two of us went in alongside and we dropped, a naval brigade, a brigade of naval personnel, to stem the advance of the Germans. Now, this naval brigade was... We put them on, I think it was in the morning, at dawn, and we took them off again about 12 hours later because they were fighting with antiquated equipment of the First World War stuff against panzer divisions. It wasn't exactly a level ballpark.
How many were there, this naval brigade?
Well, brigade, I don't know what the actual... They had... I remember they had the old... Lee Enfield rifle, of course.
What I mean is, you couldn't have had many in your ship.
Oh no, we were carrying no more than we were carrying no more than what? Well, I suppose about 300 or 400 in each.
And were there other ships?
There were other ships of the flotilla, the B boats. There are other ships of the flotilla landing this, but we were also it was the evacuation side of it that. Were proved to be necessary. We dropped them, as I say, in the morning.
Was there any shell fire or air attack while we were dropping?
Oh, yeah. What happened was that the Germans were literally in Boulogne, and they had snipers on the warehouses alongside where we were tied up. And there was they were mortaring us from over the hill, and the tanks were actually in the streets coming down towards the ship and were firing at us with it. And we were open fire on open sights with the 4.7 guns, which looked like they were just going straight through the tank and out the other side. They were solid shot. They were not high explosives. So, it was a bit of a one-sided thing, but... we got...
So that was while you were landing them, they were that close.
Yeah, that's not right. No, that was when we evacuated, because it was all within one day, almost within 24 hours.
What I asked you first was there any trouble when you were landing them?
No. We landed them fairly easily. But there was a close... As I said, the whole thing took place over 24 hours. There was a guards battalion or brigade or whatever they called it, who were already in there and were attempting to keep the Germans at bay from the harbour. But that broke down and they started to evacuate the guards, and of course merely brought the naval people back with them. So we had the whole bunch then of I think it was the Scots Guards and the Naval Brigade that were being packed on board. And of course, during the latter part, that's the evacuation, then we were under constant fire from all directions. And the captain was killed. And there was also some civilians on board. Who they were, I don't know, but... Down the wireless office, of course, there was absolute... We could hear chaos going on above. And apparently one woman came aboard with her child, and the child was killed in her arms by shrapnel, and she let out a blood-curdling scream, and she was right next to the voice pipe. And all we heard was this voice coming down the voice pipe, and it scared the daylights out of us, because we didn't know what the hell had happened. And... But that was a pretty frightening time. But you know, again, I don't know whether it's worse being in it or whether not knowing what the hell is going on when you're down below decks.
Was the ship much battered about by the fire from shore?
Not a lot, strangely enough. A certain amount, but not a lot, because, you know, you're built to defend against... shells which are fired 3 and 4 miles, and this was just most of it was, for example, we were lying alongside the jetty, and our bridge was about 2 or 3 feet above the level of the quay. And what happened was that as they got up to get on board, these snipers in the buildings alongside were cutting them down, so there were a hell of a lot of casualties on board. And so we were, as soon as we finished our 4-hour watch, or even less, because we were just keeping one guy in the wireless office, and the rest of us were out helping the wounded, doing whatever we could do to assist in that.
What state were the wounded in? Do you remember that?
Well, they were good, of course I do. Yes, good and bad. I mean, there was some very badly wounded guys. I mean, one of them, I remember, had his shoulder almost completely torn off. That sort of thing. I mean,
What could you do for them?
Well, we tried, not very much. I mean, we weren't skilled in it, in this at all, but what we do is merely mostly bandage the wounds, or do what we could. I can't remember in detail too much. I mean, it was a bit like an army operation as much as anything, more than the naval operation.
Were you under air attack as well?
No, not at that time. No, it was purely the German army coming down into Boulogne.
And what happened next then?
Eventually, as soon as we got what was left, I don't know whether they left any but we managed to. I think we managed to get most of them. There were 3 or 4 destroyers there. We managed to get all those that were there in Boulogne, and we managed to get them away back to the UK. And that was the end of Boulogne. And then, of course, having dropped everybody back in the UK, then we were off to Dunkirk, which was the next.
What about, so you took them back to Dover?
Yes, we took them back to Dover.
Now, what about the Dunkirk affair then?
Well, that started, of course, we left, it was almost immediately after we got back from Boulogne that we were sent over to give, actually, our presence there was not to actually evacuate the troops, but to act as anti-aircraft support, steaming up and down the beaches. Not that I think we were very effective, because there was an absolute hornet's nest of dive bombers, you know, what did they call them?
Stukas.
The old Stukas dive bombing. There was absolutely masses of these things. And the only British planes we saw were Sunderland's. That was a very strange thing, the Sunderland flying boat coming over. And, of course, they had they would just steam through, you know, very slow and majestic. But they had a lot of firepower on board those Sunderland's, apparently. And they did
The flying boats?
Yes, the old flying boats, yeah. That's a very, very strange sight. We didn't expect Sunderland flying boats to come in the middle of an air battle. But I didn't see it. But they were apparently, the RAF were operating inland more. So we didn't see many of them. Yes, we saw some, but very few. And so it was a pretty open day for the Stukas but we managed to get away with it. I think we were there for 3 or 4 days.
And what do you remember of those days? I mean, were you attacked?
We were fairly constantly under attack. What I remember most, though, was seeing the absolute masses of troops on the beaches and the actual evacuation going on, these small ships coming in, yachts and all sorts coming in and picking up the troops. And I remember fairly clearly that there was the big mole at one end, the big mole at one end of the city or the town, where most of the troops were trying to embark in the early days, the first day or two of the, when finally they had to get back on the beaches because they were getting such a pounding on that mole area, where ships had gone alongside, but some of them were sunk actually alongside the mole. It was a pretty hectic time.
What were the air attacks like? I mean, were you ever on deck, or did you ever see one?
I used to be on deck quite a lot.
What was it like, a Stuka attack?
Well, I think the first thing that was quite frightening and startling was the screaming effect they had as they came down. And but I don't know that it made any, because although we had near misses until we were finally hit, I don't think it particularly frightened us, strangely enough. We were more concerned, quite honestly concerned, for the guys on the beaches. And yet, funnily enough, I understood afterwards that although it looked pretty horrible with that the sand itself absorbed to a great extent the force of the explosions on the beaches. So that although there was a lot killed on the beaches, there weren't as many as one would expect. Also, of course, there were lots sunk and seaward. We did pick up a few survivors. Although we had to keep on the move, we did pick up some survivors off the small ships that had been sunk as they left the beaches. But, of course, they went back in the water again when we got sunk.
And what state were the survivors, you know, when you picked them up?
They were a pretty disparate lot. Actually, we had a couple of French guys who still had their full... How the hell they managed to stay afloat?
had their full...
full equipment and dress. The poilu had these big, heavy coats with... and it was a major job to get them aboard when they were soaked. So how the hell they stayed afloat, I'll never know. And but there were all sorts. Army, some army guys, one or two civilians amongst them.
And what how were you feeling? I mean, you were under Stuka attack. You were sailing up and down. You could have been hit. What was your, you know, how did you feel? Were you nervous or?
Not particularly. No, I don't mean that in any bravery sense. I don't think it's a question of bravery or anything else. I think probably I was too stupid to to think that it would have, anything would ever happen to me.
And what sort of what sort of messages were coming in? Or was there any, you know, was there anything urgent on the job?
There was a certain, yes, there was a fair amount of, yeah, on the job there was a fair amount of work because we were sending broadcasts back. Because, I mean, there was no point in silence. Everybody knew we were there, and not for obvious reasons. And, I mean, the Germans knew there was no point in being secret about it. So we were almost constantly transmitting messages.
What
from
sort
the
of messages? Or were they in code?
Oh, they were still encoded.
Would you know what they were then?
Well, we knew they were sighting reports of various things, of aircraft cover, if non-existent, or there was a general. The captain was acting, I think, at that time as a general. Oh, no, so this was, don't forget, this was a new captain, because the captain had been killed at Boulogne. So it was a new captain, but he was acting as a point of reporting the conditions ashore as best he could. But again, it's unfortunate. Well, not unfortunate, it was very fortunate for me that I was actually never on deck, or hardly. Well, I was on deck during my off watch period, but I didn't visually see a lot of it.
So what happened next then?
Well, the next thing that happened was there was a hell of a crash.
Where were you?
I was in the wireless office actually in this occasion.
And do you know the date that the Keith was sunk? They can look it up, but.
I think we were about 4 days into the evacuations from... I don't know the dates. I've never been very good at dates.
We can look it up, we can look it up. Yeah. So what happened? There was a crash. You were in your wireless office.
We were in the wireless office. Everything shook like hell. We knew we'd been hit, because we'd been expecting it, more or less, you know. I mean, 4 days there was a wonder that we hadn't been hit before. This one went down the funnel... and blew out the whole of the under part of the ship.
And it was a bomb from
a Stuka down the funnel. I believe I was told afterwards. So anyway, we then grabbed what I think we grabbed, if I remember rightly, we grabbed the code books, because we don't carry the cipher. We grabbed the code books and went and put them in the, you know, you have a bag, specially weighted bag. They themselves have weighted, but you had a weighted bag as well with holes in it to allow it to sink. I think we threw those overside, got up on deck, and we had no sooner got up on deck than the captain shouted, or they shouted from the bridge. I don't know whether it was the captain or not, but they shouted from the bridge, "Abandon ship! Throw everything floatable overboard." So I've...
What state was the ship in? I mean, where was it?
Settling down. It was even Stevens. It was just settling down in the water. And it wasn't in any parlous state, except that we couldn't have gone anywhere. I mean, they'd blown the engine. The engines below decks were obviously badly hit. And so I think it was... that was it. I mean, everybody knew there was no good staying aboard.
Did you throw anything over, floatable things?
Yes, I did.
What sort of things were it?
Well, it was very strange, this. It was a Dan boy. I don't know if you know what a Dan boy is, a long thing. A bit like a lance. Like, you know, the Knights of Old Lance. It's just like that. But instead of the shield where the guy holds the lance, there was a big cork float. So I just got behind this, and there it was like with this lance, swimming one arm through the water with this thing. Eventually, we got alongside.